Welcome in to DVD here on 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason here with you from Barrel House, downtown Nashville, Bridgestone Arena. The Predators wrapping up an optional morning skate. They will take on the Edmonton Oilers tonight, and the Oilers also will have an optional skate. Adam Vingan will be with us a bit later. He is doing a little side work for his group at Sportsnet with a Canadian team in town. He's doing a little coverage for them, so he'll join us here in a few moments. D-Mace, what's going on?
Nothing much. Just waiting on a good game tonight. It being Halloween, so hopefully we can get a lot of treat and not too many tricks tonight on the ice, unless we are tricking them.
Yeah, a hat trick
goals.
Would be fine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A hat trick
yeah.
would be
for
great.
The Preds, not
Absolutely.
Against them.
Absolutely. Would it be wrong of me to say if we get a hat trick on trick-or-treating to throw mask on the ice or throw candy on the ice?
I think
I don't want to encourage it, but they would do it anyway.
It'd be pretty funny.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It would be pretty funny, you know. Throw your costume on the ice.
I think that would be a good problem to have. Like,
I believe
in
that.
Did it.
It's going to be a hat trick today by the Preds.
Yeah?
Somebody's going to get a hat trick today.
Okay.
Calling it?
I'm calling it.
I'm all for that.
If it was a pick the click or a call your shot, this would be mine. Trick by somebody tonight.
As most of you know, the Predators have struggled the last few seasons against this particular team, the Oilers, who are an outstanding squad. Both teams are not where they want to be at the start of their season. The Predators are 3-0-1 in their last four games, but after the 0-5 start, trying to dig out of a hole. And in similar fashion, the Oilers have not played the way they want to either, not nearly as poorly as they did last year at the start, where they famously fired their coach. They won only two, I think, of their first 11 games. They're 4-5-1 right now. So both of these teams trying to move up and get more points. Edmonton, of course, is playing without their superstar, arguably the best player on the planet, in Connor McDavid. He is back in Edmonton, and he'll be out a couple of weeks. Elliot Friedman is going to join us at 1 o'clock. We'll get more details on what he knows about what's happening with Connor McDavid and the state of the Oilers. The Predators have a lot of work to do. They practiced yesterday, so we pretty much see what they're going to do tonight. Should be UC Soros between the pipes for them. So Adam will join us here very soon. We'll talk more about the Predators later. We've got silly underdog picks today at noon. That will be fun. Chris Sanders will be gloating, just to forewarn everybody.
Just a little
bit.
He's
going to be in a good mood. He's always in a good mood, but when he wins, and he got some action on his side. He's going to be in a particularly good mood today.
Yeah, he will be, and it's going to be it's going to be bad. It's going to be bad. I can just picture. Can we skip that segment? Or at least can we mute his mic when he's talking?
You might do what you need to do to get through that part of it. But we should have a lot of fun, as we always do, with the underdog picks. You'll have a chance to make a pick for the people if you want to be a part of that. Make a people's pick. If the underdog wins outright, you'll have a prize that you can win. The World Series has wrapped up. Mm-hmm. Congratulations to Nashvillean Mookie Betts and the Los Angeles Dodgers for a World Series victory in impressive fashion, comeback fashion last night. One of the more notable comebacks in World Series history. It's the first time a team has ever trailed by five or more runs. Mm-hmm. And come back to win in a clinching game. There's only been a handful of games where there's ever been a comeback that big. And, of course, the Yankees helped them out quite a bit. It was a meltdown by the Yankees defensively to allow Los Angeles to get back in the game, although the Yankees retook the lead after that, still had a chance to win, extend the series to six games back out to L.A. Did not happen. And a special shout-out to Vanderbilt alum Walker Buehler, who had an unreal comeback. He's had two Tommy John surgeries, just an awful year trying to get back in pitching shape. Had they not had so many other pitching staff injuries, I don't even know if he'd have even tried to pitch this year, but he gutted it out. He really came through for them in the postseason, particularly the last two rounds. He won game three at Yankee Stadium, and then last night on one day's rest, they decide, look, this is our chance, let's go for it. He came in and got the save and finished it. So that was a proud moment, I think, for everybody who's followed Vanderbilt baseball. It's like, that's Tim Corbin. That's the Vanderbilt program. That's Walker Buehler. Great, great stuff.
That's
by
another
him.
Notch on coaches' on coaches' belt. You know, guys that come through Corbin's program and, you know, ultimately go on to play in the major leagues and then you win a championship. You know, those are things, those are, it's great for Walker, obviously, but those are sort of like building blocks for a program. Because what happens is they get to go out and recruit and say, hey, listen, look.
Yeah. Did you see the World Series?
Did you see the World Series? I coached him. He came through Vanderbilt. You know, stuff like that. So it always helps when you can have an individual that went through your program that had success at your program, and then he goes on to have success, you know, in the major leagues and ultimately wins the championship. So that's always a plus for a program.
And Mookie Betts, his third World Championship as a player, and only, what, 30, 31 years old maybe. You know, he plays out west. You know, the Dodgers get a lot of accolades out there. His second with the Dodgers after winning one with the Red Sox. But slowly but surely, he's putting together a Hall of Fame career here. Yeah. This is really something.
Yeah. I wonder if he – because he's been what? He's been in the major leagues, what, how many years now? Has it been 10?
Close to 10. I think it was 2016 or 2015 that he came up. I'm going to look it up right now.
I wonder if he would ever think about.
So he's 32 now.
As he ending his career, and he has years before he ends, you know, before that even comes into play. But would he love to play closer to home? You know, to sort of finish out those last years, whether it be with the Braves. I know Chase would love that.
Oh, he could dream about that all he wants. I don't think the Dodgers are going to comply. You know, it's interesting.
But I'm just saying, like, toward the end of someone's career, maybe he's still playing good baseball, but, you know, they're looking to move on. Would he be, you know, would he be open to joining a team closer to home?
It's interesting. The big part of his career, so he's now played 11 years in the bigs. He came up in 2014. His first full year was 2015 with the Red Sox. Mm-hmm. I think every day that goes by, there's probably thousands of Red Sox fans that are sitting going, why in the world
did we trade him?
That was so dumb. It's one of the dumbest things I think the Red Sox have done, really. And you can argue that, you know, the legend of they sold Babe Ruth to the Yankees and all that stuff, the curse of the Bambino and everything. This doesn't top that, but it's also up there with, if you started to list the worst decisions the Red Sox have ever made, letting a player like that get away. And so the Dodgers signed him to something like a 12-year contract. So if you want Mookie Betts, you better come strong to get him. But he drove in the winning run last night, the go-ahead sacrifice fly. So he continues to build his legacy. And speaking of the Braves, the MVP of the series is Freddie Freeman.
Mm-hmm. Another ex-Brave.
They won the World Series in 2021. He had a great year for them. They had the contract dispute. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting thing to follow since then. So Freeman helps lead the Dodgers to the World Series. Mm-hmm. Great performance by him after he hit a bad ankle. He homered in the first four games. He carried them offensively. Mm-hmm. And the Braves, meanwhile, have won a ton of games since Freddie Freeman left. Mm-hmm. They made a very smart move to sign Matt Olson, who has been a tremendous replacement for him, mm-hmm. who's a great guy as well. But you always wonder, that sentimental thing about Freddie Freeman, who meant more than just, you know, a player. It's like Derek. It's a little bit like a Derrick Henry kind of thing. I know in retrospect right now it is really tough for a lot of Titans fans to watch Derrick Henry do his thing every week for the Ravens. And you're like, man, why did that happen? Wait a minute, why did that happen?
But there are reasons why it happens. Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It had ran its course here in Nashville. I don't mean something bad. I just mean we knew what we were going to get out of Derrick Henry. We knew that. And he wasn't, it got to a point, you know, he wasn't going to elevate this roster, you know, by three or four games. Because that's what they would have needed. He would have elevated the roster maybe to a game. Yes, I can see that. But when you're talking about keeping a guy as he's aging, and yes, he's still playing good football, if he's not worth, you know, 3 to 4 wins, then teams look, especially if they're in that transition, they're looking to get younger and they're looking to sort of move in another direction. So you know, you can have a bunch of what-ifs. I know the Sox got a what-if with Mookie. Maybe there is a what-if or what not with Freddie Freeman. Had he stayed in, you know, in Atlanta, where would the Braves have been? Well, maybe they wouldn't have been able to get the guy that they got, Olsen, had Freddie Freeman still been there. So, you know, things like that. But congratulations to Mookie. You know, on winning another championship. Is this his first or second with the Dodgers?
Second with the Dodgers. And the third overall, yeah. One with the Red Sox. The big theme of this, just from the Yankees' perspective, they had like a little league type of breakdown inning where it just was so shocking. They were up 5-0. Aaron Judge had hit a home run. He had had a big slump. So the fact that he was breaking out was giving them some hope, like, hey, wait a minute, if we win this game, they've got to go back out to L.A., and who knows what can happen. You know, the 2004 Red Sox did it to the Yankees, came down from 3-0. We just saw it in hockey where you saw the Oilers were down 3-0 in the Stanley Cup Final. So crazy things can happen. And you were starting to feel like they had a lot of momentum. And then I was trying to think of other examples in sports where just simple fundamental breakdowns cost the team. Like Aaron Judge dropped a fly ball. He hadn't made an error the whole year, the whole season in center field. He dropped the easiest fly ball you'll ever see at the worst possible time. It kind of opened the door a little bit. They made another error, which was a little tougher play from their shortstop. And then the Cardinals sin, the pitcher, Gerrit Cole, the Yankees' best pitcher,
doesn't cover
first base on a grounder to first. That's routine.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, Little League.
Exactly.
You could understand if an 8 or 10-year-old did that, but you'd still be mad.
Them, yeah.
You're like, wait, this is
you
what we've been working on.
Exactly.
This is the fundamental
Absolutely.
Building blocks. You've done it a million times. I was trying to think of other things. One of them that I came up with was J.R. Smith. Remember J.R. Smith forgot what the score was?
Exactly.
And LeBron looked like he was just ready to just
like, snap his neck.
Yeah, just like, what are you – what do you think the score is tied? You know, or you know, whatever it was.
We can go back to the infamous timeout with Michigan.
Chris Webber, the timeout.
Yes. Yep. I mean, you can go back to things that, you know, the what if, the pure basic fundamentals – of the game, knowing that you don't have any more timeouts, you know, knowing the score on the board and what you need to do, you know, or the pitching, you know, you got to cover first base if you're the pitcher.
Yeah.
When the first baseman is going to get the ball. Little things like that that you just think like those should be routine things. You shouldn't even have to think about it to know this is what you do.
Yes.
And last night it didn't happen.
It just shows you that everybody's human.
Exactly.
It could happen. Adam, welcome in.
Hello.
We were trying to think about, could you think of other equivalent things on the big stage, like the Yankees' defense in the, I guess it was the fifth inning last night?
Uh-huh.
I imagine you mentioned the Super Bowl, Falcons-Patriots.
Well,
yeah, but that wasn't fundamentals. That was just a total.
It was a meltdown, for sure, but I don't know if it was just like easy fundamental things like a routine fly ball or covering first base, that's just elementary.
Or you
Chris Webber taking a timeout.
Mention that.
Yeah.
I think that would have to be there. J.R. Smith, he got a rebound on a missed free throw.
Instead of going back up with the ball, he brings it out, not knowing the score. They're down. They're like, well, "What are you doing?"
Yeah, yeah.
So,
well, let me put the Yankees' collapse last night into historical context, which I think Willie might really enjoy. As a diehard Mets fan, the Yankees are the only Major League Baseball team to do the following: blow a 5+ run lead, allow 5+ unearned runs, commit 3+ errors, commit catcher's interference, and commit a balk all in the same game, regular season or postseason, since earned runs became an official stat in both leagues in 1913.
Well, listen, if you're going to do it, you might as well do all of it.
I'd like to know how many regular season games that list of things has happened. The catcher's interference, the not covering first on top of the errors, that's rare
meltdown.
In any level of baseball, I would say, just to have those things listed. The Fox put it on a box in the bottom corner. Listed, and he's got a picture of Aaron Boone, poor guy, is walking around going, how did we get here? What's the deal?
I'm going to tell you where it happens in Little League.
Yeah.
That's where it happens.
Oh, and you would be.
Exactly.
They're 10. Yeah. You know, it's going to happen.
It was Aaron Judge who flubbed the pop fly, correct?
Yes.
That is, it's a catastrophic mistake considering the situation that the Yankees were in. But that was a physical mistake. The Gerrit Cole not covering first base, that is a mental mistake of epic proportions.
And he told, I read Tyler Kepner's account where Gerrit Cole was trying to explain what he saw, and it just didn't make any sense. I don't think he was, I hope he wasn't trying to throw a load of baloney at everybody. It just,
He just had a brain collapse.
He should have just said that. Look, I got to cover. Yeah, and exactly. When the ball's hit over there, it doesn't matter what I saw off the bat. I've got to go cover it. And he froze.
Mm-hmm.
He froze. Now, he had done an incredible job to overcome the first couple of errors, right? He had huge strikeouts. Mm-hmm. He struck out two guys, so he's one out away from getting out of a big jam with no runs mm-hmm. where it's still 5-0. And I guarantee you the second Mookie hit it off the end of the bat, Gerrit Cole is relaxing. Whew, I did it.
Exactly.
I'm out of it. And he forgot
and
to go cover.
Yeah,
first.
He got a trail. But it's
and it was the funky spin that threw him off. He saw the ball on the foul line and said,
and
I don't need
going.
To go
exactly.
over there. Yeah, the first baseman's going
to
be right there.
They'd be able to tag him. But it's karma. It is complete karma. Because what happened the other day, and the Yankee fans gloated about it.
Yes.
What we do. We
D play up. Defense. We D
yeah.
up. Yeah.
Okay.
The fans.
All right. Karma's going to come back and smack you right in the face. And that's what it did.
One of the best parts of the post-game coverage last night, Mookie Betts went to the Fox Sports desk. Mm-hmm. And remember, after the game the other day, when the play happened with mm-hmm. the foul ball, he was very diplomatic about it after the game,
yes.
saying it's irrelevant. Mm-hmm. It happened early in the game. We lost. I'm moving on. After the game after the game last night, he said that he's never experienced anything like that. Quote, I was telling my wife that was like the second time in my life I've ever wanted to fight someone.
I believe him.
My thought was, look, you can do all the things. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed back in the ballpark.
Exactly.
Or, we're going to take your – really the punishment for that should be you should get your butt kicked. You should get your butt kicked
yeah.
thoroughly and just be done with it and say that's the response that we get. I mean, forget – I know that's barbaric and that will never happen, but it's like when the guy runs on the field, the streaker
yeah.
or whatever. Like,
you deserve to get tackled.
You deserve to get tackled hard.
Exactly.
And everybody
Absolutely.
Will root for you to get tackled hard
Absolutely.
Because you're being an idiot. And that's what I felt like with those guys.
So
I don't blame Mookie at all for feeling that way.
Here's what I recommend. I think that those – Yankees fans should get pummeled by a Mets fan in a Grimace costume.
Yeah!
How about that? Well, let me ask you this, Willie, because...
Can the Grimace, does he have enough muscle tones, like, really to bring it, though? He looks like he needs to work out a little bit.
He can use his belly, though.
Yeah,
he can use his belly,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
There was a Saturday Night Live skit to that effect that recently, and I'll share it with you guys during the break. But, Willie, this is what I was curious about last night, because I'm on record as saying that I am a very petty sports fan. If the team I despise the most loses, I take as much pleasure in that as my favorite team winning. So as a diehard Mets fan, were you taking pleasure in watching the Yankees completely unravel last night?
Yes. Come on, Willie.
Just say yes, Willie. It's okay.
You enjoyed seeing it.
I don't.
You didn't mind seeing it.
I don't. Yeah.
You didn't mind seeing the collapse.
You didn't mind.
Would have been better if they would have gotten swept.
No. I didn't want to see them win. Mm. I'll say this though, I do like Aaron Judge as a person, and I for a guy that good to be struggling that bad and then have that happen, I did feel for him a little bit.
Just a little bit.
But I was like. Yankees lose.
The Yankees,
Yankees lose.
The Yankees lose.
My goodness.
That's what you wanted to do. Yeah. That's okay. That's okay.
And for the record, the Mets were 4-0 against the Yankees. You're just throwing that out there.
You can give yourself a pat on the back. I will allow it.
And the Mets took the Dodgers to 6 games. Yankees only took them 5 games. Mm-hmm. So there's a little satisfaction there, but, yeah. You know.
Wes and Hermitage on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com says that dude, I believe in reference to the Yankees fan who interfered with the foul ball, has obviously never had his rump busted, but he needs it. Both of those guys need a swift rump whooping.
But some people are, you know, who is it? The Barstool guys had him over to the studio and had like
exactly.
a great old time. Like, what is going on?
To me, stuff like that, that's irresponsible by Barstool. It
yes.
encourages stuff
right.
like that for people to do things like that. But, you know, they don't care. they just want clicks. They just want people to watch it. I get it. I understand. But it's weak. Like, you don't put somebody on television that just messed, that entered into somebody else's workspace and disrupted their workspace, you know, to a point where it could have.
He could have got hurt.
Actually, one, he could have got hurt. Two, that could have been a critical moment in the game. Now, it didn't lose him the game, obviously, but that's something that you don't want to see in sports, like somebody interjecting themselves. Yeah, you paid a ticket, but that don't give you the right to interject yourself into the game like that.
Yeah, I'd feel totally differently if the guy caught the ball.
Exactly.
Because he's allowed to. If the ball's in the stands, the fan can catch it.
But you tried to take it
from him. Mookie had already caught the ball.
Exactly.
Like, it was stupid. So this is what I will say as a person who does not root for the Yankees, mm-hmm. wants to see them lose, all of that stuff, yes, that's true about me. But I will say this about the organization. Mm-hmm. I think for the most part, they exude a lot of first-class stuff. If I were the Yankees, I would not want those fans in the park. They would be excommunicated from the fan base, and I would make a big spectacle of it. I would make a big spectacle of it. I was like, you guys could
a public flogging, perhaps?
Absolutely.
Oh, no, I would just say these guys were season ticket holders, and they
everywhere.
Are no longer season ticket holders.
I will give them their money back.
Yeah.
And a little bit incentive. I give them a couple of more dollars. Do not come back to my stadium again.
Because that's not what Yankee fans do. That's what I would say if I were running the Yankees. And I would feel like that about the Mets or any other team that I was
with.
You don't want that.
That's not cool.
There has to be an example made of that, or else the Barstool people are like, hey, we D'd up, man.
Exactly.
Hey, man, we tried to. That's over the line.
Yeah, that's
over the line.
That's by Barstool Sports that those guys on.
One texter says that Rob Gronkowski was apparently college buddies with
yes,
those guys. He went on Up and Adams and said that they were
some
of his friends from Arizona.
Come on, Gronk.
That does not shock me in the slightest
to learn that
Rob Gronkowski is friends with those Yankees fans. But the Dodgers get the last laugh.
Ha!
That was very
Yankee
loud.
Fans.
That was very, very loud,
Derek.
That
was for all Yankee fans right there.
I'm sure they can hear that all the way up in New York. By the way, one of my favorite things to do when stuff like this happens is looking at the back pages of the New York newspapers, listening to New York sports talk radio.
What was the best headline? Did you see them? I haven't looked.
It was I think it was like the end with three E's for each error that they committed.
That's creative,
good.
Right
the,
there.
The back, good the back pages of the New York tabloids, it's fascinating stuff. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, a notable NFL draft analyst had some interesting remarks about young quarterbacks in the NFL today, and it relates to what we've seen in Indianapolis with Anthony Richardson. It relates to what we've seen right here with Will Levis, and we'll discuss that next. But before we do, tune in to 94.9 The Fan this Saturday at 2:30 p.m. for our college football game of the week, Florida versus Georgia. Presented by Twin Peaks Restaurants, take your tailgate to Twin Peaks, home of 29-degree drafts and wall-to-wall sports. Join Jared Stillman, Chris Sanders, and Derek Mason at John Bon Jovi's Nashville this Sunday, right down the street from Bridgestone Arena. For the pregame show from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m., they will break down the Titans' Week 9 matchup against the Patriots and give you the latest updates before the game. The pregame show is presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment, Sundeck Nashville, Sloan's Motorcycle ATV, and award-winning Blue Note Juke Joint and Blue Note Cross Roads Bourbon. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingan here with you inside Bridgestone Arena, where the Predators will host the Edmonton Oilers this evening. So the big news in the NFL this week was the Indianapolis Colts' decision to bench Anthony Richardson for Joe Flacco. We've talked a lot around these parts about Will Levis, the development of Will Levis, the lack of development of Will Levis, however you would like to discuss it. But I heard something interesting from Mel Kiper Jr. He was on ESPN's Unsportsmanlike radio program talking about how you can't develop quarterbacks in the NFL anymore. This was Mel Kiper Jr. on Unsportsmanlike on ESPN radio.
Being part of that draft come late April.
Mel, anytime we're talking about a team drafting a quarterback at the top of a draft, they usually have to do a lot of losing. And if they have an incumbent head coach, he's going to be on a hot seat. So just curious, based on what you've seen in your decades of covering the NFL draft, seeing franchises try to develop quarterbacks, how does it impact a young QB when they're going into a situation with the head coach and potentially the general manager on the hot seat?
I think you want to be part of the head coach and GM. You want that head coach and GM to draft you and certainly have time. You mentioned the word, Chris, it doesn't exist anymore. Develop doesn't exist. They don't develop quarterbacks anymore. They force feed them. They expect them to be great. They don't like them to work through struggles. Struggles are not tolerated anymore from a young quarterback. Bad reads, inaccurate throws, interceptions. It's that mistakes aren't tolerated anymore. You're expected to play at a seven-year veteran level when you're a rookie second-year quarterback. So the development, the growth of a quarterback to work through, make progress. You're not allowed to anymore. You're not allowed to because mentally and physically you're destroyed. You're destroyed by getting beat up because you're out there and maybe somebody's going behind a bad offensive line, or they're getting beat up mentally by everybody. Media, fans, everybody saying, you stink. You shouldn't have drafted this guy. Let's draft this guy this year and get him out of here. That's what they – it wasn't like that back in the day. And now we're – like I say, we're chewing them up and spitting them out early. So the development of a quarterback doesn't exist. That's why I get down to who needs to go back. Get as much time in college as you are allowed to get. Get as many starts in college as possible. Eli did it. Peyton did it. Others have done it. Go back and get those extra 12, 13, 14, 15, and by the playoffs, if you get there, how many starts it'll be. Get those extra dozen-plus starts, and that will help you deal with the scrutiny and the expectations that are there for a rookie second-year quarterback in the National Football League.
That was Mel Kiper Jr. on ESPN Radio's Unsportsmanlike program. What do you guys make of that?
I'm not going to prescribe to all of what he's saying. Listen, I've been on the record of saying they don't develop quarterbacks in college. That's where it starts. They don't. Why? Because their thing is I want you to win for me. That's we're not talking about developing you for the NFL. I need to win now. So by any means necessary, if I need you to be a running quarterback, then you're going to be a running quarterback. If I need you to be a statue inside the pocket, then that's what you need to be. I need you to do what I'm asking you to do to win football games here. If you are that good, then you will ultimately, your talent will show, and you will make it to the NFL. But I am not here to develop you for the NFL. I'm here because you were amongst the top recruits coming out of high school, and I need to win football games. That's what I need to do. And then and once they get in the NFL, it's not about them not developing guys. It's the whole structure of collective bargaining now. You can only hope, like before, you could sign these guys to these 6 and 7 year contracts when you draft them in the first round. You give them all this money and you allow them to sit for at least 2 to 3 years and then you play them and then you're allowed to, and then you see what they got and then you're able to sign the contracts. Now, it's like you draft a guy now, the clock starts now. So you got to figure out what you got. No longer can I hide him on my roster for 3 years and then let him play for another 2 or 3 because he's on this long rookie deal and I don't have to worry about him no more. Rookie deals are not that long anymore, whether you're a first rounder, second rounder, or seventh rounder. These deals are not long no more. So you got to see what you have in these individuals. That's what Mel's not telling everybody. It's because of the structure of collective bargaining, because you don't have these years, you know, these extra years to develop a guy, you have to throw him in there and you have to see what you got. And if it doesn't shows in the first couple of years, you fall further and further behind the teams that are ahead of you with quarterbacks. So every team, they say, hey, listen, we got to do something. Either we got to go out and get a veteran guy and allow the veteran guy to be the starter while the young guy sit. Or we got to draft again. That's just how this league is. So the NFL isn't, the college isn't, they don't develop guys. That's not their main goal, is to develop a quarterback. And then once you get in the NFL, it's not that we don't, when he says they don't develop guys in the NFL, what he's saying is that all NFL coaches, they don't know what they're doing. Basically, that's what he's saying. They don't know what they're doing. They want to develop these guys, but they understand they only got a short frame, like a window to develop these guys because that contract is looming. It's there. Just like with Green Bay, they were forced to give him a one-year deal. Why? Because that was the first year they were seeing him, and they wanted to hold on to him for at least another couple of years, but give him some incentive to want to stay.
Yeah. And then they signed him to big money after he was
after 1 year,
after one good year, or
exactly.
Maybe arguably half, or one half of a really good year.
Absolutely,
I agree with a lot of what he's saying. I think D-Mace is dead on, and I think the cycle continues. Right, I think that's what's frustrating is nobody's been able to really break the cycle. The same thing keeps happening over and over and over, where you get five new guys every year and everybody's excited. We got our guy. We drafted him. And then four of them fail, you know, on different levels, right? Some just completely fall on their face. Others struggle for two or three years and then don't get the second contract. And then there's one, maybe two, that end up being the special guy. I've been saying this for years. They just don't ever come up with a developmental league where you could have the equivalent of the AHL in hockey or Triple A baseball, where a guy can fail.
Or the D League. Or the
D League, right, where a guy can be developed without the scrutiny and without the consequences of whether you win or lose. That would be a perfect thing for the quarterbacks, but nobody ever even pursues it when you get down to it. And so I get Mel's point of stay in college, but Will Levis did stay in college.
Exactly.
You know, he is older. Like, he did get extra starts. Now, he had to go to a different place to play, so he didn't play five straight years where he was the starter, and that's an issue in college. Is for a quarterback, you could get caught behind another really good quarterback and not play, so you don't get the experience. Anthony Richardson is a great example of what Mel Kiper, I think, is talking about. He probably would have benefited from another year of college, but if everybody's telling you're going to be a top 5 or 10 pick, it's hard to turn that down.
But we've seen guys. It does. It's not about how long a guy stays in college. It's really not.
You don't think so?
No, because we've seen guys, especially now, let's say now, because back then that was the norm. Guys stayed at least 3 years, possibly even four. More guys stayed four than three when it comes to quarterbacks. But even now, these guys, we see guys in college going on their sixth year, and have they developed any more than what they are? No, they haven't, because these coaches now are there to win ball games. They're not there.
You're saying
to develop
it's still
you.
So different in the NFL than it is in college, even if you stay in college.
Absolutely. You can stay in college. Well, hell, Winky, what's his name?
Chris Winky. Yeah. He was
28. He went back to college. He was an older guy, and he still came into the NFL and wasn't no good. So it's not about how long you stay in college. You can stay in college for 20 years. If you're that good,
Rodney
you're just not good. Exactly. You
can
be Rodney Dangerfield. Yeah. So that's why I'm not prescribing to everything that he says. I'm not saying everything he says is wrong. But when you say, well, guys should stay in extra, that's not going to help them. It's really not. Rarely does it help guys when they stay that extra year. If you are a top five pick, then come on out and sort of deal with it that way. Because we've seen guys. Matt Leinart could have been a top two or three pick. He could have been the first pick in the draft the year before he came out. Had he came out his junior year, he would have been a top pick. Go back to school, Matt Leinart. Go back to school. He goes back to school. It didn't help him much. Actually, he fell down in the draft, and then he turned out to be a horrible quarterback. So, again, when people see these young quarterbacks playing, there's going to be some that, like C.J. Stroud, that just, you know, hit the ground running. It doesn't mean that these guys are developed or aren't developed. It's just that their natural ability and their gift to play that position is so much superior that, you know, even if they're not, even if the development is coming slow for those guys, their talent in the meanwhile takes over. And then eventually they have to be, you know, they have to be developed as quarterbacks as far as how they see the field. Because no longer, because that's what Jackson ran into. He was electric for a while, running around, doing all this stuff. But when teams finally figured it out and started corralling him, he had to become a passer then. So what you're telling me in Jackson's case, if Mel said they're not being developed as quarterbacks, Jackson wouldn't be where he is today if he hadn't developed as a quarterback.
Well, think about over the past 3 years. Think of all the quarterbacks that have been drafted over the past 3 years. I mean, the hit rate on drafting a franchise-altering starting quarterback, I imagine, is pretty low. And just think about
20%.
Right.
Best,
I mean,
right?
Think about the past 3 years of quarterbacks that have been drafted since 2020 or 2021. Mm-hmm. How many of those guys are sure things right now? You mentioned C.J. Stroud. Mm-hmm. He looks like one of them.
Yes.
Daniels looks good.
Brock Purdy.
Yeah. Looks good. He
slipped
back a little bit, but he's still, He's still a great starting quarterback story for sure. He's still a starting quarterback.
He's a unique case.
Yes. I mean, Trevor Lawrence got paid like that type of quarterback. Mm. Certainly hasn't played like it this season. But then you've got your Mac Joneses and your Justin Fieldses and your Zach Wilsons and your Will Levises. It's hard. It's hard to find these guys. Bryce Young. Exactly. Anthony Richardson might now fall into that pile as well, considering what's happening in Indianapolis.
And again, it goes down. It's not that they're not developing.
Kenny Pickens.
Yeah, Kenny Pickens. It's the same guy.
Pickett.
Yeah, not Pickens. Pickett. It's not that they're not developing these guys. Because again, when you say that, you're slapping every quarterback coach, offensive coordinator in the face, and they don't know what they're doing. It's not that they're not developing these guys. They just don't have the time that they need, that they used to have, to develop these guys. These contracts, these first-round contracts, are not as long as they used to be. So when you're talking about development, yeah, we're developing him, but it has to be on a fast track. And some guys don't learn that way.
615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on this conversation. Brian Callahan was asked about this yesterday with the news that Anthony Richardson had been benched. We've seen Bryce Young be benched. He has come back into the starting lineup because of an injury to Andy Dalton. But what does Brian Callahan think of all this and how it relates to Will Levis? We'll share that with you. Coming up next, Willie Dunick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, The Game. Tune into 1025, 1063, The Game this Saturday for Vanderbilt football. The Commodores will take on Auburn with pregame beginning at 10 a.m. and kickoff at 11:45 a.m. Coverage is also available on the 1025 The Game app and at thegamenashville.com. Willie Dunick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingan here with you. So we were just talking about Mel Kiper's thoughts on the lack of development of young quarterbacks in the NFL. And with all the news surrounding Anthony Richardson earlier this season, Bryce Young, the question is, how about the Titans and Will Levis? And Brian Callahan was asked about, you know, the balance of developing a quarterback versus trying to put a winning product on the field yesterday. This is what Brian Callahan had to say.
Between winning and development, I know you can't speak for Shea Sutton or Dave Canales or any of those guys, but when you are considering that, what are the factors in your head that kind of determine which is more important in a given moment?
You know, we're in a production business, you know, and at some point you reach that apex where we do have to win or show that we're improving. All of those things are all a part of it. And you really want to make sure that, you know, the rest of the team feels the same way too. You reach a certain point where if they don't feel like that gives them the best chance to win, that's always the hardest part, because you got a bunch of guys that put their bodies on the line every week too, or it means something to them, and they don't take they want them held to the same standards. You know, if your position is not playing well, usually what happens? Find somebody else. And so sometimes that you get to a certain point where that also happens, where, you know, guys are fighting and trying and fighting through injuries and playing hard, and they just sometimes want to make sure that the rest of it's in line with that too. And so that's where it gets tricky, if you're not playing well and you're trying to develop and still win. So again, these are like really deep philosophical conversations for a Wednesday, but those are all the things that go into it.
So Will Levis, by the way, yesterday did return to practice. He was a limited participant with his right shoulder injury. No telling whether he will start this weekend against the New England Patriots. And by the way, speaking of young quarterbacks, Drake May on the other side in concussion protocol, he was also a limited participant for the Patriots in practice yesterday. So who knows if we'll see a battle of the veteran backup quarterbacks, Jacoby Brissett versus Mason Rudolph. But interesting comments from Brian Callahan, just because of the young starting quarterbacks in the news. And Will Levis, unlike Young and Richardson, although Richardson has been banged up, Levis has been out of the past two games because he's been injured. So there's a bit of cover there for Will Levis. But some interesting comments from Brian Callahan about what's been going on in the league, as well as how it relates to his own team and his own quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, each and every situation is different. We can't compare the Commander situation to the Titan situation. We can't compare the Indianapolis situation to the Titans situation, or the Bears situation to the Titans situation. And you can go down the list of, you know, what you're trying to compare and what you're trying to do. Because each team is at a different point in their franchise's, you know, sort of development of their quarterbacks. This is what I talked about. This is the tough part about being a head coach, I believe, or just being a coach in general, is, you know, trying to do what's best for an individual all while trying to do what's best for the team. You know, that, especially when that individual is so much a part of what you want to do as an organization. Like, how his development hinges on how the organization moves forward. So when it comes to a quarterback, everybody knows that the quarterback gets a longer leash when it comes to the development, whether it be, you know, it don't matter what quarterback it is. They tend to get a longer leash when it comes to development. Rather say, you know, the wide receiver. Why? Because I can bench a wide receiver, but I got five other guys that I can bring in. He's going to play, but he's going to play sparingly. You can't do that with a quarterback. You can't. If you want to develop him and you want him to, you know, be in there, you got to leave him in the game if that's what the plan calls for. So when you're looking at a quarterback, it's like, okay, how long can I allow this experiment? Because essentially that's what it is, an experiment. How long do I let this experiment go before I lose the team? Or before guys start, you know, looking at me like, hey, we're doing our job. He's the only person not doing his job. How long as a coach? So that's a fine line, and everybody has to be on board. That's the thing. Everybody has to be on board, from the owner to the GM to the head coach, about how are we going to proceed with this quarterback. Because if you don't and you leave him in there too long, you're going to lose your locker room. Because the guys are going to be, especially veteran guys, they're going to be like, listen, man, I didn't come here for this. You know, I didn't choose to re-sign here and stay here so y'all can, you know, allow this guy to develop for the next 2 or 3 years. No, either he got it or he doesn't. And if he doesn't, it's time to move on. Because if you don't, you will lose your whole locker room. And again, once you lose your locker room as a head coach, the owner might as well come down and fire you right then and there, because you're never regaining it
back. Well, I think that's part of the problem, too, is the coach doesn't get 3 or 4 years
exactly
to wait for the quarterback to sink or swim, because if your record is 10 and 28, you're gone, right? And it's the next guy that inherits the issue. So that's another part of the flaw in how quarterbacks are developed. And so that's part of why the cycle happens the way it does. I am wondering if we are going to see a bigger trend of middle-class quarterbacks who maybe have not done great out of the gate, who have matured, survived, learned. And Sam Darnold, you know, he'll be a really interesting one to watch. Is he coming back to earth a little bit? Maybe. But if he is a success story, we know Baker Mayfield's a success story, and this is, what, his fourth team?
Yeah.
Mayfield, if you include Browns, his little stop for the Rams.
Rams, Carolina, and 14.
And he looks like he is a good solution for about $20 million less on the cap. Will there be more of these? Is that where teams should start looking for solutions? Mm-hmm. And the Titans could find themselves with that choice after this year. If they decide Will Levis is not a guy you hand the reins to for next year, but you're not sold on the quarterbacks coming out, maybe you're looking for the next Baker Mayfield / Sam Darnold, and not, we got to draft the guy with the first pick, and then here we go. Let's see if he's the guy. There might be a better choice.
615-737-1025. It's almost noon. It's Thursday, which means only one thing. It's time for Silly Underdog Picks. We'll do that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.